to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to episode 11 of the Rogue Startups Podcast. Dave, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic, Craig. Totally pumped after MicroConf. How about yourself?
I am doing great. Also sort of pumped after seeing what you guys did at MicroConf and the episode we released. Actually, earlier today, we released the live episode that you recorded with all those guys at MicroConf. Was really inspiring to sit back and see, and I'm pumped to go to Europe in October.
Yeah, I mean, you should definitely get tickets for that now. As soon as they go on sale, a fair warning to anybody who ever wants tickets to MicroConf, if you're not on the early lists of those things, I mean, they sell out so fast that people are amazed the first time that they try to get MicroConf tickets and find out, what do you mean they're all sold out already? They only went on sale 48 hours ago. It's like, well, yeah, that's pretty much how they work. Yeah, you pretty much have to be ready to make that decision on the spot as soon as it goes on sale. You can't take some time to think about that.
Yeah. I had my ticket in the shopping cart for this year and kind of talked to my wife about it and said, hey, if we can go either to Vegas or we can go to, it was in Prague last year, and I don't know where it'll be this year, but I said, you know, what do you think if we kind of postpone it 6 months and go to Europe instead? And that was what we decided on. So, yeah, but I mean, to your point, 48 hours gone, even on the early bird list. So speaking of MicroConf, Dave, you know, we put out the episode that kind of was the live show that you recorded last week. But what about just a couple of key takeaways from the conference for you?
Oh, gosh. You know, there's always such great stuff every year. But I would say that there's probably one thing that really stood out of all the other talks, mostly because he was one of the newer speakers this year, was Steli Efti from Close.io. And for those that have not checked out Steli's site, they should definitely do so. It's software to basically support your sales process and make it so that you can actually turn, you know, cold and warm leads into actual closed business. And they have a very systematic way of handling that and some software to support it. So that's some great stuff and a good plug for Steli's business. But his talk was really energizing in the sense that, well, first of all, it was definitely not safe for work and just hilarious to listen to because Steli is a very energetic speaker. But that aside, he basically was saying that 99% of his wins are all about him following up relentlessly until he gets basically either a hell no or yes, I will do what you would like me to do. And it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, 3 times or 30 times. He had a great story actually at MicroConf where he said that they were getting funding for, I think it was Close.io or maybe it was the company that started Close.io. Anyway, it was this billionaire dude that they were getting funding for. He had actually said yes to them, but then it took Steli 48 follow-up emails just to get this guy in the same room with him so they could sign the paperwork and get things moving forward on that. But I can imagine that most of us would have basically been like, okay, well, I might follow up once or twice and 3 times, like 4 at the very max. And then you feel like, oh, he's not talking to me. He must hate me. And Steli's like, no, you just can't assume that. And he had to follow up with this dude 48 emails in order to finally get him into the room. And of course, obviously Close.io is the result of that now. But that was like the one thing I think I really took away because I do exactly what he said, you know, follow up once, follow up twice, maybe go for a third time. And then after that, I'm like, okay, F this. They don't really care about me. They don't like me, you know, they must not want to hear from me anymore. And they basically are not going to talk to me. So I'm not going to talk to them anymore. You know, passive aggressive, right? And Steli's like, that is absolutely the wrong thing. Until they have said something positive or negative to you, you keep following up. So that's probably my number one.
So I believe Steli was part of Y Combinator, which is pretty cool to have him there. But, you know, I in my day job, right, so I am in kind of high dollar sales. And so I deal with what he's talking about every day. And I'm an engineer by background and training. And so it was a big adjustment for me to do exactly what you're talking about. It is to say, you know, hey, email once, email twice. Oh, they're not interested. And, you know, if you think Stelly is intense, you know, I don't think anyone in our kind of startup space has seen what sales management is like. But they are just absolutely fucking relentless. And they will hammer you as a salesperson. And I have to say, you know, now that I've been doing it for a couple of years, it really is kind of healthy, right? Because they say exactly what you're saying. Why not? Why haven't they bought something? Why aren't you following up with them? Where are they in the process? And it makes you, or makes me at least, get out of my comfort zone a little bit to say, until you get a fuck you or a yes, you're not done and you're in the process. And, you know, we live in a bit of a marketing world, I think, and I separate sales from marketing in that marketing is kind of this broad brush, general, you know, approach to selling stuff, whereas selling is a one-on-one conversation with somebody. And I'm glad Stelly is in our space now because he's addressing a lot of these high-touch one-on-one topics that probably a lot of us don't deal with just in software and selling things online.
Every single developer that I've talked with at MicroConf that is getting started, and this includes myself, I'm not excluding myself at all here. There's this intense discomfort about A, talking to the customer, and then B, getting in the customer's face and forcing them to make a decision. And that's what you pretty much have to do as a self-funded entrepreneur. You know, your first 10 customers, you have to win them over. And the only way you're going to win them over is to, you know, give them something that they're dying to have, explain the benefits that they get out of this. And those benefits, you know, have to be things that they're really passionate about. And you've got to ask them for the sale. And all of those things are extremely uncomfortable for introverted developers. There's no question about it.
So interesting segue. I am seeing that firsthand with Podcast Motor. It's a pretty high price point tool, right? So it's $500 a month. And I have not had one sale where I haven't had a pretty lengthy dialogue with the potential customer over email. And so it's actually making me rethink my approach to how the website is designed. And I'm saying instead of just having the buy button on the front page of the website, maybe I should have just a form to start the dialogue with more people. Because I think if I can get more people in the funnel, maybe I can convert them to paying customers instead of them having to find the contact form and shooting me a message and asking me questions or something like that. I think as you go up the price or the value chain higher, the interaction and the amount of contact you have to have with a potential customer goes up exponentially. So anyways, I guess something I'm thinking about with Podcast Motor is just get more people in the door so I can talk to them. And if I'm any good at sales, hopefully I can convert as many of them at least, and maybe more than I'm doing by just having a buy now button on the front page. So,
and in fact, that actually gets me to my second takeaway from MicroConf that has to do with Joanna Wiebe's talk. So Joanna Wiebe is from Copy Hackers, and she is definitely a subject matter expert. Basically, everybody at MicroConf sort of falls into one of two buckets. They're self-funded entrepreneurs that have a business at some level of scale, depending on whether you're talking in attendee talks or regular speakers, or you have subject matter experts, people like Joanna or Sarah Hatter from CoSupport, where they, you know, have something that they know very, very deeply about and then can talk about that relevance to self-funded entrepreneurs. So Joanna's talk this year was about things that she knows to be true. And these are truths that people, you know, think that are true, but she knows that there's a slightly different reality to it. And one of them specifically has to do with buttons on websites. So everybody knows that they should be optimizing their headlines. But what the real truth is, according to her, at least today, and this is based on Copy Hackers consulting test data and the various A-B tests that they've run on client sites, is that it's not just the headline you want to optimize. It's actually the headline and the text on the button. You want them to relate to each other strongly so that when the headline hooks them, that the button gives them an action related to the headline that you want them to take. So in your case, you're going to want them to start a dialogue with you in some fashion. And so you're going to have to think up an action on that button that is relevant to the users that are in that space. Now, since you've got a handful of customers at this point, I presume you've been saving these highly valuable email conversations somewhere. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So now you've got customer, let's call it customer data. You've got actual conversations with people who are having real issues with their podcast. So now you can actually extract pieces of those conversations where, for example, let's say you had, Barack Obama as one of your customers, just throwing that out there. Obviously, Barack, it doesn't have a podcast, so not relevant. But suppose that he did.
Not yet, at least.
Exactly. Not yet. So the day that he does, I'll be recommending him to Podcast Motor, of course. And so when he comes to you and has a particular objection about something, you have to, you went back and forth in the email conversation and sort of overcame that objection. So now what you need to do is use those objections to put headlines on your site or tidbits of paragraph or bulleted list or something like that to overcome those objections and get people to move forward and click that button. And I think this is going to be some experimentation because you're in a price point that I don't have a ton of experience in. The $500 per person, because when I'm dealing with stuff in Business Directory, the most expensive thing that I have is $400 and it's a one-time sale. So, the language that goes around that is very different than the language that goes around yours. But now you've got these six customers, so you'll have to sort of play with that language and then find out what is getting more people into that funnel so you can start talking with them and then finding out what objections keep coming up over and over and crafting some text around that makes sense on your site.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it might even be a good time to start to introduce split testing. I haven't done any split testing before, but it's the perfect kind of thing to start split testing, not just the copy on the site, but even the action that it has people take. I think I could change a button from just sort of a buy now to a take me to a form to fill out, to just submit information so that I can start a dialogue with them ahead of them purchasing.
Well, let me ask you a question on that. How much traffic do you have physically coming to the site right now?
I've had about 500 visitors to the site, and that's in 6 weeks.
Your traffic is probably a little low to be running split tests right now. I would say that you want to go for like more macro level optimizations. Like take your best guess at what you think users are going to resonate with and just get people in there and start to refine the message more. Because I you can try the split test, but here's the problem. The split test has to have enough people going through there to give you some statistical accuracy to say, yeah, with 95% confidence, I think this change wins over this other test. And with 500 visitors in 6 weeks, that's like less than 100 visitors a week, which is really like what? 20, no, not even quite that, like 18, 15 to 18 a day, it's going to take you forever to get enough people to run through that to see whether a particular test succeeds or fails at this point. So I think just working on the macro message might make more sense on that.
Gotcha. So, but that's a good point to your takeaway from Joanna's talk is getting kind of a cohesive alignment between your title, the body of whatever you're talking about, and then your action. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And one of the other things that was part of her talk is that each individual piece of your web page has one job to do. So your headline has one job to do, and that's to get people to keep reading. And your paragraph has one job to do. It's to get them to move to the next sentence. So each sentence really has to have that has to have a lot of punch to it. It's got to have a really gripping quality to it. It's got to speak to exactly what it is whatever the client is that's landing on your landing page, whatever they want to solve, they have to keep wanting to read to the next sentence. And your button has one job that's associated with it, and that's to get clicked. So you got to put the right text on there to make sure that people click that button. And your email has, you know, the subject line has one job, is to get the email open. The email body has one job, and that's to get you to read, to keep reading through it. And your email CTA has one job. It's to get them to do whatever that is. It's click the link or press the button or respond to it or whatever it is that you're supposed to do. So each of those, if you just sort of break it down to that one job aspect of it, that's a really powerful way to make sure that your customers aren't going to end up leaking out of your sales funnel, basically.
Yeah. Yep. Interesting.
So, yeah. But I mean, and this is not to take away from like all of the people that were there at MicroConf and their talks, because we had Jason Cohen who did a Q&A and Jesse Meekham who did, you know, a surprisingly awesome talk about bookkeeping, which sounds like it would be extremely dry, but Jesse's a great speaker. So Samuel Hulick did one on onboarding, and Heaton Shaw and Patrick McKenzie, you know, fixtures at MicroConf did stuff on their current businesses and things that they've done in the past. And so all of those talks were very often Okay. You would think that I still must be hung over from MicroConf the way I'm talking here, but they were all very awesome. Yes, they were all very awesome. And, you know, I would highly recommend anybody who hasn't been to MicroConf, Craig, to definitely go. So.
Yep. Soon enough, I'll be there. I'll be there for sure. So, Dave, we got a voicemail this week.
We did indeed. And, you know, for the first caller on the show, I have to say I'm pretty excited that it was Rob Walling. And Rob had a comment about the show that we had done a couple, 3 weeks ago. Or no, I guess it was just the episode 9, right?
Yes.
So it was the one where Craig basically got authorization to do a $5,000 spend on his business. And, you know, Craig and I bantered back and forth, and we're like, well, maybe you should buy, or maybe you should put it into podcast mode or marketing. And Rob sent in a little MP3 and said, you guys totally need to be doubling down, Craig should be totally doubling down on podcast motor and putting all of that effort into there first to stay focused. And so, you know, what do you think about that, Craig?
Yeah, so let's play the audio clip real quick.
Hey guys, Rob Walling from Startups for the Rest of Us. I've been enjoying Rogue Startups, and I wanted to chime in on a topic you guys discussed a couple episodes ago. The topic was Craig talking about acquiring an app. And while I am a big fan of acquiring instead of building from scratch, it feels to me like with Podcast Motor having some success, that I would double down on that market at a minimum, and probably Podcast Motor itself, before I started looking elsewhere to acquire an app. Having tried to do two things at once in terms of like growing apps, it almost never works. It's really, really hard to do. So I think, Craig, the first question I would ask myself is, do you really want to grow Podcast Motor? And if you do, then take that cash that you were thinking about going off and acquiring another app with and invest that into Podcast Motor and grow that. If your attention or your desire to grow Podcast Motor is waning, then I would take it off the market, either put it on autopilot, sell it, shut it down. And then, yes, I probably would focus on buying an app, and you could pick any niche at that point. The fact that you are currently catering to basically podcast enthusiasts and folks recording their own, if that's the market that you want to serve, then figure out how to serve them, either with Podcast Motor or other apps that are within that same market and catering to the same customers. Because this is a big mistake I made early on. You know, this is back in 2007, 2008, as I acquired apps. They were in all these disparate niches. And so I never had the cohesion of being able to build a brand with an audience. And that just makes it easier. All that to say, I would think really hard before I tried to grow Podcast Motor and acquire an app on the side through a broker or Flippa or whatever, because it's just going to split your attention, and I don't think anything is going to be successful. In my experience, you need to focus on one thing and double down on that. And if you have cash that's burning a hole in your pocket, I would save it for a rainy day, or I'd invest it into the effort that you're already working on. I hope that's helpful, and I look forward to future episodes. Keep up the good work.
So, Dave, what I think is Rob is right on. he, you know, he's got a ton of experience in this kind of thing, and is progressively moved up the, I'll say, food chain in terms of value and revenue in his businesses. So I absolutely respect everything he has to say about this. And he's absolutely right. I mean, I look at what buying a $5,000 app would get me in terms of revenue. And I think about what adding one more customer to Podcast Motor would get me. And it's no comparison, right? So, you know, I couldn't get $200-$300 in monthly recurring revenue out of a new app that I probably have no idea about. But if I put that money into Podcast Motor, you know, one $500 a month customer, not to mention that it's monthly recurring revenue, not just a one-time purchase, is just in terms of dollars and cents, it makes a lot of sense. But also in terms of sort of the synergy, I guess, of keeping all of my eggs in the same basket and really identifying the target customer and serving their needs better, you know, it just makes a ton of sense, even if it's not necessarily in the service itself, but something related to it. I have a couple of thoughts around, you know, ancillary products and services I could offer around podcasting. And there's just a ton of opportunity there, and Rob is right to kind of bitch slap me back into to my proper mindset and say, hey, you got something that's working out. I mean, just a, you know, a quick update. I have, like you said, a handful of customers at you know, at $500 a month. It just in you know, in all honesty, that's a much better start than I thought I would get. And I mean, we even had an episode, what, 3 or 4 episodes ago now, where I was kind of saying, man, I don't have any customers. A lot of people are saying that's a great idea, but, you know, but it's not, you know, they didn't see the value prop, and I finally have found the right customers. And yeah, I have to double down on it.
Yeah, more than just double down here. I mean, this seems like it has more viability, like you said, than anything that you could possibly buy out of the gate. You know, the first time that I bought a plugin from Flippa, you know, I was only making $300 a month, and it took me months and months and months to get a return on that. And I even already had an established market at that point. So it seems like you've kind of gotten the intersection of good timing, personal interest, and something that people are willing to pay for. So there's no reason to, you know, start looking elsewhere and lose that focus. You know, one thing that I definitely agree with that Rob said in the voicemail was the lack of focus. If you have a lack of focus, you're not going to put all the energy into the one thing that you really need to at this point, or the one thing that could be the most successful. And, you know, I can look back on 5 years at this point and see that exactly the times that I have done the poorest is when I'm trying to spread myself thin across multiple things, and I can't uniquely focus on the one that's really making the most. So I think that I think he's right. You know, focus on Podcast Motor, double down on that, and the past month has given you a lot of motivation to do so.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think that segues us nicely into what we want to talk about is the main, I want to say, teaching part of the episode today, but the main content of the show is really taking a product from the first few customers to scale, I'll say. And Dave, I'm sure you've seen it with your plugins, is, you know, the first few customers you do things that don't scale, right? Like we hear about is, you know, really high touch interactions with those customers, but then how do you build out a real business process around that to be able to allow it to grow exponentially, you know, more than you can do with your hands on everything.
Yeah. And, you know, I will be the first to say that I actually, I could be doing a lot better in, let's call it, systematizing your business. So there was a talk at MicroConf 2, maybe 3 years ago where Mike Tabor had a discussion about losers have goals and winners have systems. So if you're trying to get your business to scale and you're trying to hand touch everything along the way, you end up becoming really stressed and becoming the own bottleneck in your business because of the fact that you can't outsource this, you haven't documented these things, and you've not listed the steps that somebody could take to perform this task in your business. And as a result of that, there's no way to make other people take that over for you. And that becomes a real problem in being able to scale your business. If everything has to go through you, it's just not going to work over time. So there were a lot of great follow-up things that came out of that. So I actually went and did some research after that talk, looking up other, ways to systemize your business and blogs and podcasts that were around that. One of those was one called sweetprocess.com, and that's by Jervis Whitley and Owen McGab. I can't pronounce his last name. I'm not even going to try. Anyway, but Jervis and Owen have a great setup here to basically help you document and understand all of the little tiny details that go into your business. And when you can actually document all of that stuff, then you actually have something that you can hand to somebody else, and then you can go through the process of refining it and honing it and find out what you missed. Once you've done that, now you have a way to train new people and basically take that off of your plate altogether and focus on other aspects of the business. Now, there's another guy from MicroConf, and his name is Kyle Brown. He also does a WordPress service as a service. He and I spoke at MicroConf, and he's a great guy. He did a book called Systematize, which we'll put in the show notes. And his book basically has this same kind of thing here, where you might be explaining stuff to employees over email all the time, and you've got documents scattered in various places. What ends up happening is that you're so disorganized that the people that you've hired to work for you are not being terribly effective, and the people that are supposed to be doing their jobs may not understand exactly what are the circumstances under which I should do X, or what are the circumstances under which I should change X and do Y instead. And if you haven't documented that all in a very systematic way, then they really sort of struggle with that. And if they don't know what they're supposed to be doing, then they come back and ask you. And of course, that interrupts you and breaks your flow out of the day and so on and so forth. So he wrote a book, basically how to organize your business and create these processes and make it so that you can be more successful in your business and outsourcing this stuff that isn't – I don't want to say it's not core to your business, but it's stuff that you can hand to somebody else, and then you can focus on the things that are truly the stuff that only you can do. So it sounds to me like Podcast Motor is getting close to a place where you kind of need some of that stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, so it is. And I mean, I have – it's a nights and weekends kind of thing for me, right? I mean, I work on it after the kids go to bed and a few hours on the weekends. So the big one and the early one was actually editing the podcasts themselves. And I've taken care of that. I have a guy that is a professional audio engineer editing all the podcasts. So that's great, because that's an added value to the customers over me doing it. And I'm good at it, but this guy is a professional. So that's great. I mean, the podcasts sound a little better already, I can tell. But it also allows me to focus on, to your point of taking the core things for your business. For me, and it maybe my, I'm swayed a little because of my background, but I think sales, call it marketing if you will, is the only thing that only you can do, right? Everything else in your business should be able to be handled by someone else. And for you with Support Buying, that's going to be the same thing, right? I mean, it's going to be you doing sales and marketing and podcasts and outreach and customer interaction, maybe a little bit of customer support or customer questions is something you need to do and I need to do for my business, and everything else should be outsourced. And starting from the beginning, I'm only two months into this maybe, but I thought about it right at the beginning. I said, what's going to be the first thing to go off my plate, and what's going to be the next thing to go off my plate? And I've got those prioritized already. Editing the shows was taking me 3 hours for an hour-long show. It's obviously the first thing to go, because I just don't have, 15 or 20 hours during the week extra to work on that. And I pay somebody, and that comes off the top line or the bottom line of the business, I guess. And that's something I think I want to talk about and maybe get kind of an expert on – the show to talk about, Dave, but you know, at what point should you start thinking about your profit margin once you've outsourced all this stuff? But that's a different topic altogether. But that's something I'm thinking about, is if I'm outsourcing a lot of the work of creating the product, you know, then what are you left with? But I have it all in my head of, you know, the first thing to go is editing the shows. The second is creating the show notes and doing all the posting and moving the damn media file around all over Creation, because there's just a fair amount of work involved in that. And that's probably the next thing that will go to be outsourced. And I'm in the process of doing that right now, to hire kind of just a general VA that has a little bit of Photoshop skills, a little bit of WordPress skills, a little bit of, you know, just being able to listen to a show and understand what's going on and create some show notes. But the other thing that I think this talks to is not just the scalability of a business, but its viability in the marketplace long term, right? So I think, you know, everyone probably has an exit strategy in mind long term, but a good business should be able to be sold at any time. And this is something I was just listening to the E-Myth, and that's kind of one of the things that they talk about, is your business should be able to be sold or be franchised at any time. And to do that, you need process and you need systems, and you need things that anybody can do. And not that I'm, you know, I don't even have any idea of selling my app because it's brand new, and I can't imagine doing much better than this and anything else, but that's kind of a litmus test, right? Is like, is this so well honed that anybody can do it? And if so, then it's probably a pretty good process.
Agreed. And in fact, so when you bring up the point of selling the business, one of the talks, so this was Patrick McKenzie's talk, the very first talk on the first day. He has recently sold one of his businesses, and I think the second one is sort of in process. So obviously, Patrick is the most well-known for bingo card creator. And this year, he finally decided to put that up for sale. It's no longer his core competency. You know, it's been great. It's given him the proving ground to learn A-B testing and SEO and all of the stuff. But he was just really sick of it. He's been kind of checked out of that for a good 3 years and had it in maintenance mode. But the reason he was able to sell Bingo Card Creator is that he had it documented literally down to the gnat's eyebrow about support emails, about server setup, about how to respond on various contact inquiries that teachers would make on how to build bingo cards, the server, like the websites itself, everything. He had absolutely everything documented so that he could hand things off to VAs and, you know, be completely hands-off in that business. And the only reason he was able to sell it as easily and as quickly, which is not to say that the process went all that fast. I think it was still like 4 months of due diligence, which he said was the kind of pain that went along with like a colonoscopy that didn't have anesthetic. But you know, he's through it now, so it's all good. And it wouldn't have been possible if he had not spent that time documenting and becoming extremely detail-oriented around his processes. So that really speaks to being able to execute well in your business, is to document it now. And, you know, if you're not going to sell for years, great, that's fine. You know, you can look at that as a longer term thing, benefit if you want. But in the immediate short term, it helps you be able to outsource the things that are not as critical to your business and focus on the things that are, like you said, sales. You know, nobody is as passionate about your particular business and your idea and is going to sell it as well as you can. So you are truly the best person to do sales, but you are not necessarily the best person to do development or podcast editing or maybe even customer support after a certain amount of time. I mean, it took me a while to outsource tier one support, but now I finally did. And, you know, even I could do much, much better on my process documents. I thought I created some pretty good ones, but, you know, even after I put those out there, my two guys that work on that still had plenty of questions. And stupidly, I didn't document all of their questions when they were asking them. So now if I have to bring on somebody new, I'm going to have to go through that process again. And then this time I'll document it and be a little less stupid about it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I heard Sweet Process, maybe on Justin McGill's podcast, but I definitely heard it on the Tropical MBA Guys podcast, Dan and Ian. They talk about process a lot in their business, and they're maybe a little more the digital nomad crowd, you know, online business instead of software. But I mean, Podcast Motor is an online business. But either way, I mean, those guys talk a lot about process and creating a real business. And yeah, I'm going to definitely check out Sweet Process. You know, the other thing, Dave, and this is, I think we might both be in this boat a little bit, is reinvesting money in the business while you still have other sources of income. And to a point, reinvesting in the business as much as you can. It's a cool thing right now to say, you know, I have income, I don't need the money, so I'm able to reinvest it in things like outsourcing and like content creation and promotion and ads and things like that. I think as long as you're able to, you know, for people who still have a day job or working on this as their side gig until it scales up, invest as much money as you can back into the business to set up the structure of the business so that it can scale to a good point to where when you decide to go full time in it, you can just power the engine and scale it up, and it's ready to grow. I think that's the big thing, is getting something ready to grow, and investing that money in it while you can, say, afford to.
I would agree with that, but with a caveat. So, you know, I remember reading on the Groove blog that they spent $50,000 on a website redesign. And I remember Alex's blog about this particular thing. He said this was one of the dumbest decisions that we ever made, and it almost literally killed Groove. So I would definitely say that you want to invest in things that are either taking things off of your plate or that are accelerating your growth rate. So, like, for example, investing in things like content marketing, because evergreen content will, you know, you pay for it today, but you're going to get a long tail of traffic out of it over time. So that continues to provide a dividend, if you will, right? Or things like taking customer support off of your plate, because that continues to provide a dividend of freeing up your time to do other things. But if it's things like, okay, I'm going to go spend $50,000 on a logo, that, you know, that is investing in your business, but it perhaps might not be the best thing that's going to give you that ROI to scale later on. So I would say, yes, invest in your business, but invest in things that are intelligent and maybe growth oriented, I guess.
For sure. For sure. Yep. And that's one thing I have done is hired Dwayne from Ghost Blog Writers to do some blogging for me. That's a really cool service. I mean, it's a lot like Podcast Motor, actually. You give them, you know, a list of topics, they go out and research it, write up an article. I'm paying them $60, I think, for like an 800-word article, and going to do one a month and start building out the Podcast Motor blog. And it's very straightforward niche to blog about. And I think it's ultimately, like you said, you spend money one time to potentially acquire some customers as opposed to like paid acquisition or something. Anybody who lands on a blog post, I think, is already a pretty good potential customer. The other thing in terms of content that I'm looking at is building a course on podcasting. And I'm not exactly sure what aspect of podcasting and what spin I want to take on it, but pretty sure that the Essential Podcasting course will be coming out here in the next month or so. So essentialpodcasting.com. Anybody who's interested can go check it out. It's going to be probably a course on creating a podcast that matters is kind of be the tagline. So creating that unique voice that everybody in podcast needs to have. I think everybody understands that from a blogging perspective, you have to have your own unique voice. I think in podcasting, the space is getting a little saturated with the same old entrepreneur on fire and smart passive income type crowds, and everyone needs to really stay true to themselves and hopefully give some content around how to do that and be unique.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. How is Support Vine going?
Support Vine is going well, so I am pleased to report that my developer number 4 has been doing some great front-end work, and he actually did some he tore some stuff apart and put it back together in a better way. And he's at a point now where he's no longer just sort of struggling in the code base, but he's looking at things and going, you know, Dave, that was a really dumbass way to do that. Can we refactor that and fix that? Or I don't like this. This is butt ugly. You know, uh-huh. I mean, he's very opinionated, which is awesome, because you never want one of those milquetoast developers that's like, oh, I'll just do whatever you want to do. You know, you kind of want somebody who says, God, you know, Dave, that kind of sucks. And so he's keeping me honest in that regard, and that's good. We've made some pretty good progress. Now I'm realizing, because I hired a solely front-end guy because I was having trouble finding a mixture of Angular and Java, I am now looking for a Java guy to finish up some stuff on the back end that I don't have time to do, and my other Java guy still is totally AWOL after months, even though he said, well, you know, I'd like to hang around and maybe do this in a few months. Mm-hmm. He's not responding, so I'm like, okay, well, it's time for me to go. I can't hang on to you forever. So I'm in the middle of hiring them. I did an interview today with somebody who seems promising. We'll see if that works out. And aside from that, I talked to several people at MicroConf about Support Vine. I was actually a sponsor at MicroConf for Support Vine. And so I got stickers out to everybody, and some people were talking about it. A couple people signed up for the beta email list. But the one thing I really realized at this point that I really need to do is get this sucker in front of people so that I can start getting some actual bona fide feedback. And I know exactly who I want to put it in front of, and I know when I want to put it in front of them, but I need to get it to the point where it's basically not, you know, a stick of dynamite that's lit in front of them and blowing up all the time. Cause that's kind of where I'm at right now. And I'm not, you know, I'm definitely not in the polishing the turd phase where I'm trying to make it ultra beautiful. Anybody who, if you had seen Support Vine right now, you'd look at it and go, geez, Dave, mm-hmm. Couldn't you do a little better than that? And, you know, that's the raw nature of what I'm trying to work with and get out in an MVP fashion. So, in fact, Kyle Brown, the guy that I mentioned earlier, is one of the guys that he has an extensive customer service background and worked with a lot of different tools. So I want to get it in his hands so he can see how it works, how it flows. What does it look like compared to the other tools that he's been with? What are its strengths and weaknesses? So, because I think he can give me some pretty honest feedback on that and has certainly been interested in giving me said feedback. So it's just a question of me getting it basic. You know, I have to get the basic functionality in place before I can really let him on board onto that. So
how does that timeline look like?
Well, that's probably, you know, I haven't even really looked at what actual tasks need to be done since I got back from MicroConf, because there was this whole list of things that I needed to take care of as soon as I got back in the door, mostly on catching up with support emails and stuff like that. I'm hoping that by early summer I can have something in his hands, because I've got to deal with this hiring thing and get some back-end functionality in place before that happens. But I'm pretty darn close on all of it. So, you know, I'm thinking maybe within the next 2 months.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. I know it's been a while coming, so that'll be a big day.
Oh, God, yes. This has been too long. I was telling several people at MicroConf how long I had been working on this, and all of them just kind of had this pained look on their face like, really? It took you that long, Dave? And I'm like, yeah, yeah. It took me that long. Sorry. I suck.
No, it's a lot. I mean, that's the reality of bootstrapping, right, is you have limited resources of time and money to put towards something.
Yes, and everything always takes longer than you think. I had a conversation with Rob Walling about this, about Hittail and Drip, and now he's hearing my stories about it with Support Vine, and he's just sort of nodding along and has that empathetic, yes, I've been there, felt that sucked. Oh, yeah, yeah, you'll get through it, yeah. That sort of thing. So, yeah, it's coming along. It's coming along.
Good, good. All right, what do you think? We'll wrap it up?
Yeah.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.